science.
Hey everyone, welcome to Probably Science. I'm Matt Kirshen.
I'm Jesse Case.
And I am Andy Wood. Hello.
Andy's having tech issues.
Andy's having technical difficulties, and we've been trying to record this podcast for 3 hours already today. So we're tired.
Tara and I
did our own briefly. Everyone else was gone.
We should introduce which Tara. You know, of the show, returning guest.
Multiple returning guests. Maybe the most guested.
I can't even believe that. As you know from previous encounters, Science and I know nothing. So I'm just really happy to be here.
Yeah, no, we're happy to have you. You know, we're very happy to have you. You still for those that don't remember, Tara is a wonderful, hilarious person and friend of the show, and has no sense of smell. Which I always remember.
That's right. I'm sitting here right now not smelling a damn thing.
Not smelling anything. Yeah.
No, not
recording
a thing.
This live from her bathroom. Not a problem. You know? Better sound quality.
Yes. I think I said before, though, I like to know when there are bad smells around because I don't like the idea of sitting in the fog. You know, I like to extricate myself from any potential fog attachment. So I need to know when there are bad smells around. So I do enlist friends' help with that.
I always look like it's me. Like if there's a bad smell, you know what I mean? I've got a lot of scent paranoia for no other reason than just my vibe. It's not me. But so one of my least favorite things is, you know, if I'm in a large group or at a bar, pub, whatever, and someone somewhere has farted, I feel all eyes are on me and I hate it. It wasn't me, you know. It's horrible.
Well, yeah, I mean, I try to chance a silent but deadly, I don't know how deadly it is. I don't know if it's something I can get away with or not. So it's very, very risky.
Sure. It could be just be a silent and kind of wounded.
It could be, exactly. It could be silent but slightly faint, teetering on the brink.
Right.
But I'll never know. I'll only know by the reactions of those around me. That's not a bus anyone wants to be on.
Yeah, no, I understand completely. Huh. I wonder if there would be some, you know how like the deaf community, like for instance, if you're deaf, your alarm clock that wakes you up in the morning is a strobe light feature. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's how you wake up, or like that's why, you know, fire alarms, for instance, you know, have
like a vibrate alarm.
Something like that. So you trigger a different sense to let you know, hey, something's up. And I wonder if there could be some sort of smell equivalent, like if you had like almost like a mood ring that you wear or something, where if it turns a different color if a smell is particularly putrid.
Oh, that's absolutely brilliant. Or just
you know
some
what I mean?
Kind of a dye or coloring that tells me when there is something evil smelling around. I would really find that useful.
Yeah,
you can normally see like the little wavy lines coming off someone, right?
That's true.
No, that's only that's only for pies. No, the green wavy lines are only for skunks.
That's right. Sorry, yeah. And skunk lines can't support a person's weight, but pie lines you can
levitate.
You can fly.
You can levitate
right?
To sniff. Exactly. Yes, yeah. But skunk.
But mostly
skunk
only
wavy
to
lines.
Windowsill. Mostly only to windowsill height. That's very important.
Right. Yeah. Because I think they investigated that, and it can't be used for sort of transcontinental flights or anything.
No.
Well,
it only works short range and up to a window.
Up to a windowsill, but they have done experimenting with windowsills on different stories, and it doesn't work above like the third story. It's very dangerous, in fact.
Okay.
Yeah, there have been a lot of situations where someone thinks someone's just jumped off that building. Oh my god! And it was just someone that was walking by and sniffed a pie, and
pie tragedy.
Floated all the way up. And sometimes they put out, they're called pie nets.
Okay, that's what those
wow.
are. I never knew what those were for. It's like when you find out what the dimple in the bottom of a wine bottle is for.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, those are pine nuts. So, I feel like we're already just rolling out with the facts.
Well, I live in a place where I regularly see coyotes and roadrunners, so I tend to get in the headspace of believing I can walk off of a cliff if I don't look down first, and it's not true. It's just there's coyotes and roadrunners around.
Yes. Like, man. Yeah. I remember
that
when
sounds
I
magical.
I remember when Matt came to visit you and drove straight into that fake tunnel. Yeah. It was horrible. He almost didn't make it out of there.
So many Airbnb guests have complained about that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The fake tunnel and the random anvils sometimes that are always falling.
I'm also right next to the world headquarters of Acme Co. I don't know if I told you guys that. Mm. That's in Joshua Tree.
Do they do tours? I mean, that would be such a brilliant... That would be an excellent tour. We got taken to Pfizer when I was a kid. We got taken to see where they ended up making Viagra. It comes from Cork, everybody. So that's the kind of tour we got as kids. But I mean, Acme would have been so much better. I didn't want to know about Viagra back then.
Don't mislead people, because like there's going to be a run on the Cork tree by Chinese businessmen. If we don't make clear, you cannot get it from Cork the tree.
Yes. No, she means that horny men in Cork sweat into bottles.
Okay, yeah.
And Cork is a city and a county in Ireland, just for geography fans.
Yes, and the men in that town are particularly horny, and they sweat into bottles, and that's put into a Viagra.
Okay.
Yeah. Very interesting.
We got all that cleared up.
Science.
So many facts.
That is kind of fascinating, though, to tour the Pfizer facility. Like,
did they show you
where they make pills and stuff?
Yeah, that kind of thing. Like, it was production line stuff. We didn't get into any back rooms and hear any formulae or anything like that, which is, you know, a bit of a waste of time, honestly, because a factory is a factory. But yeah, that was a tour. I wonder, are they still taking children to big pharmaceutical companies for tours these days? Or is that just an 80s thing? It must be an 80s thing. It sounds like the kind of thing that's really not a very good idea.
I had a lot of field trips where in hindsight we're like, oh, this would never happen now, just because of any potential sort of danger something. Like, we went to a this place where they refine like rocks. Like a giant, I mean, there's just like boulders falling in, you know, giant cranes and stuff. And like, no one had a hard hat. It was just my little class walking around. And just at a very, you know, like one of those factories sort of from like an 80s heavy metal video that just looks very nondescript and dangerous. I don't know.
They were heady times. What can we say?
Yeah. And then the Renaissance Fair. We always did the Renaissance Fair because it was one like up the road. And I still go. I still go. So,
Tara, have you ever encountered, or are you even familiar with the concept of a Renaissance Fair? Because
I've seen them on TV, but we don't have them really in Ireland.
No.
We don't have them. There's the Bunratty Folk Park. Bunratty Castle is a medieval castle that you can go and visit, which was the birthplace of... I don't know his first name, but Mr. Penn, who became Pennsylvania, that was his birthplace. He was born in that castle. You can visit castle.
William
Penn. There you go. And he, that castle has a banquet that you can go to at night. But I think that's probably the closest we have.
Yeah.
Tell me about Renaissance fairs. What happens?
Well, it's completely inaccurate. So there's nothing really to say. It's its own. It's kind of like become its own thing.
It's like tiki bars.
Exactly. It's like tiki bars. It's a false view of history that never really happened. So it's like, it's not exactly like they'll have like a joust, you know, which those were over by the Renaissance. It's basically a medieval fair, but even then, not really at all.
Because the Renaissance was not, I mean, yeah, it spans like 1,000 years, then also adds in dragons and shit, right? So it's...
Yes, exactly. Well, it's the Renaissance mess. Fair Renaissance. Right. The Renaissance Fair version of the Renaissance has gone even into the mystical, like there's fairies and elves and stuff. The Renaissance Fair in Tennessee is exactly how you would imagine, and it lasts a month. It's four weekends for every May. 4 weekends. But each weekend is themed. So they have Pirate Weekend, and then they have Viking Weekend. And
Vikings?
Yeah, I know. It makes no sense. And so it's just turned into this weird sort of like World of Warcraft thing. It's very, very strange.
Yeah, Holly took me once to the one near LA, and
I've been to
it
that
was very
one.
Odd.
Yeah.
And also people thought that I was doing a character, which was
Oh, that is annoying. Yeah, people thought you went all in on the.
Yeah, I just wanted to know where the toilets were, and so I just asked a guy, and I was like, "Why, yes, sire." Wait, oh God! No, it's just...
Are you doing that on stage, Matt?
I think I've mentioned it once because it came up naturally. Someone mentioned it, but I haven't.
Well, mention it more. That is so funny. That is so funny. Oh man!
Isn't it wild when your background is sort of it's like they'll make an assumption like that. For me, it would be like that there's some kind of mysticism going on. Maybe the amount of times the Irish language is used in fantasy stuff. I think there was some famous usage. It was like an Irish bus manual. And somebody was using it to cast a spell. And but it was sort of what it was actually reading was like the brakes are positioned here. And but
wow.
It was all given full mystical heft.
If passenger doors do not open when pushing the button.
Now, what do we think the root of that is for people deciding this language is. This is wizardry stuff.
I think because it has some beautiful sounds in it, and it isn't very familiar to many people. Unless you've grown up in Ireland, it's highly likely you won't. I know people do study it around the world, but it's niche. And so I think it's because it sounds, I guess, unfamiliar. So they reckon we must be mythical creatures. And some of us are. But we never reveal who.
Right.
Are you familiar with what happened with Scott's Wikipedia?
No.
So this is... Scots is its own dialect. I don't know if it counts as a dialect or a full language, but there is a Wikipedia that is in the language of Scots, and it turned out a few years ago that some kid in America... had written something like 60% of it just guessing what the language was.
No way!
I mean, the entire... Like, half of the Wikipedia had to be scrapped and rewritten from scratch because some guy was just sort of guessing, like, oh, hi.
No! So there was no actual Scots Gaelic there at all?
There was some real Scots Gaelic, but also he was just using like an online dictionary, so none of the grammar, none of the verbiage was right. It was all the sort of people who actually spoke Scots, which once again is a proper language, which is like that only means hard in the sense of difficult, and you've used it to mean like hard as in steel, and it just doesn't like it just none of that.
There's been since the kind of emergence of the far right and all of that, there have been a lot of people cosplaying as Irish people online. And so Irish people like to catch them out by speaking to them in Irish Gaelic. And they'll use Google Translate clearly. But so one very famous instance was this guy said, he asked a question in Irish and the response came back, "Iv, U-I-M-H." And everyone's going, what does he mean by "if"? There's no such word. And they figured out he had just Googled the word "no," which in Irish you have to use a verb to do it, ni ha or neil. But he had Googled "no," N-O, full stop. And it had come back with the word "iver," which means number, and abbreviated it. So
there's
it was like literally...
a portal opening in my living room. I don't know how to tell you guys...
Wow. See? Okay. I can finally reveal I'm one of the mythical creatures. I am a mythical creature. So yeah,
a
so that's a very long
coming out of it. There's a bus coming out of the portal.
They say if you see the bus, your days are numbered, but they will be fulfilling.
We've conjured the bus. Okay.
this
so yeah.
So what was this mistranslation? I interrupted.
Yeah, the mistranslation was the abbreviation of the word for number. Mm. So it was a real tell. It's like they didn't even know the word for no. So there you go. Don't try and fool people who actually speak the language. I guess that's a good rule of thumb.
This teenager had written over 20,000 articles on Scots Wikipedia. Oh, and he just written it as like English with a Scottish accent.
I'm a huge fan of insane, like, I connect a lot with non-dangerous insane teenagers. You know, sure. like when like you hear a story about like a 13-year-old that like tries to fly a plane across the country. That was a big one. Remember that kid just took a plane and then like immediately crashed. But I was just like, oh man, that's great.
This reminds me of, did you guys watch the movie Hype about the Seattle grunge?
Yeah.
Do you remember the Sub Pop? I did not. The Sub Pop receptionist. I just dropped a link in the show notes.
The one who made up a load of slang, got it in the New York Times.
Yeah,
that was great.
It's also.
Like, I mean, that was an intentional one though. That was her just fucking with people.
But it's like the same sort of like, you know, when you just sort of mysticize a region. So New York Times calls Sub Pop, the record label, because they want to know what the kids are saying up in Seattle. And they got on with a receptionist who was just like, oh, I'm just going to make shit up.
Yeah.
And it ended up in the New York Times.
She also sprinkled enough like real ones in there as well. Yeah. So it's just like a few of them were real slang terms from the community. Yeah. And then there was just absolute bullshit.
According to the story, it says she kicked off the list with jokey colloquialisms that had a veneer of authenticity. Lame stain for uncool person. Rock on. A happy goodbye. Soon she progressed to ridiculous expressions like swinging on the flippity flop for hanging out and cop nobbler for loser, which that sort of makes sense. But this went to press in New York Times. Like, what is happening in Seattle? It's a whole different country. It's like, no, you just had a kid who thinks you're stupid.
Wow.
Yeah. Man. Some of them are like either real or very plausible, like fuzz for heavy wool sweaters.
Yeah.
Kickers for heavy boots. That, again, seems very... reasonable. And then big bag of bloatation for drunk.
Yes.
or Tom Tom Club for uncool outsiders.
Ouch! Tom Tom Club were pretty cool. They just didn't have the
Bird. Tom Tom Club's great.
Yeah. I think that's a whole... I saw somebody post a video of, you know, how many different things have sampled a sample of the Tom Tom Club song that, you know, became Butterfly by Mariah Carey. So then they had some kids' mind getting blown when they heard Butterfly, not the most recent iteration, and they didn't go all the way back to Tom Tom. I'm like, no, there's more. This onion keeps going deeper than how far you went.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love the sort of – that kid was perfectly well-meaning and just ruined an entire – like,
I'm just admiring his dedication. That's incredible. I admire him, and I'm kind of, he should be given some sort of award or put to, you know, some really good use. That kind of dedication is like, point the kid in the right direction, and he's going to achieve great things and invent a whole new language.
I mean, it's the same thing as my favorite thing in the world, which has come up on the show so many times, is one of my all-time favorite things ever is the woman who fixed the Jesus mural.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And just the best of intentions. There was no malice in her whatsoever. She didn't even know she was doing. Even when she was called on it, she was like, "What? I've just helped you guys for free. Like, what is?
I know.
Why is everyone mad at me?
I know. I would love for Jesus to come back, and he looks just like her version. And
she's a whole new religion starts around her because of that.
Yeah. She's some new weird prophet, you know.
And actually, you can conjure that Jesus if you use a microwave manual and you just use the Irish translation and read it aloud.
You can.
Back he comes. Ding!
Guys, speaking of teenagers doing weird things.
Yes. Are you talking about what I think you're talking about?
Yeah. So we're all aware of the sort of seven wonders of the ancient world.
Sure.
Right? The Gardens of Babylon. My wife.
Hey.
No, I'm kidding. So
wait, that guy from that joke can't be complimenting his wife, can he? You're complimenting her.
No.
It doesn't work. sick.
No, no, he's calling his wife very old, I think.
Oh, I yeah. thought she's sick. She's
take my wife over okay. my dead body. Okay. She's yeah. amazing. She's amazing. I will kill you if you try and take her.
Yeah. No, a 13-year-old has a eureka moment with science project, school science project, that suggests Archimedes' invention was plausible. That's going to be the Archimedes death ray, famously used in, the Iliad? Or
I thought it was just a legend that he did it.
Perhaps. But the Archimedes death ray was a way to destroy boats, like a whole armada, using the power of the sun.
Mm-hmm.
A big mirror to focus the energy, right?
Yeah, big mirror to focus the energy and all that. So often called the father of mathematics, Archimedes was one of the most famous inventors in ancient Greece, with some of his ideas and principles still in use today. Mainly olives and salad, which a lot of people don't realize. But one fabled device has left scientists speculating on its existence for hundreds of years. The death ray. And now a middle schooler may have some answers. This is Brendan Sinner of London, Ontario, has won 2 gold medals and a London Public Library Award for his minuscule version of the contraption, a supposed war weapon made up of a large array of mirrors designed to focus and aim sunlight on a target such as a ship and cause combustion. The Greek polymath has fascinated Sinner since he learned of the inventor during a family vacation to Greece. So for his science projects in 2022, he recreated the Archimedes screw, a device for raising and moving water. But he didn't stop there. He found the death ray to be one of the more intriguing devices, and every 13-year-old boy wants to build a death ray, right? Sometimes it's referred to as the heat ray. So all these historical writings, right, they suggested that Archimedes used burning mirrors to start anchored ships on fire during the Siege of Syracuse. From 214 to 212 BC. So Sinner here says Archimedes was so ahead of his time, and it really did revolutionize technology at the time because Archimedes was thinking about stuff that no one actually had before. The death ray is such a neat idea no one at the time would have thought of. Now, there's no evidence, though, that this contraption ever existed. So, you know, that is noted in the project. Many have tried to recreate it to see if it could be feasible. So in this kid's attempt at it here, he set up a heating lamp facing 4 small concave mirrors, each tilted to direct light at a piece of cardboard with an X at the focal point. And in this project he designed, this is for the 2023 Matthews Hall Annual Science Fair, he hypothesized that as the mirrors focus light energy onto the cardboard, the temperature of the target would increase with each mirror added. In his experiment, he conducted 3 trials with 2 different light bulb wattages, 50 and 100 watts, and each additional mirror increased the temperature notably. He says, I wasn't exactly sure how the results would come out due to there being lots of different results with this topic, but I did expect there would be increases in heat, but not as drastic as I found when I did my experiment. Oh, my God. I didn't know this article would be so long, guys. I'm really sorry. I'm really sorry. So the greatest increase.
Just to cut to the chase. Basically, we all have to pay him $20 billion by nightfall.
This is weird.
Say goodbye to your precious palace.
Yeah, your beloved. Yeah.
The light bulb with no mirrors was 81 degrees Fahrenheit. He added 1 mirror, and on the focal point, it increased to almost 95 Fahrenheit. The greatest addition was on the 4th mirror. That jumped by an additional 18 degrees, so he got it all the way up to 128 Fahrenheit. So he found these results to be quite remarkable, as it suggests that light is going in all directions and that the shape of the concave mirror focuses the light waves onto a single point. Well, we know all that.
None of this is groundbreaking. It's just, I mean...
Right, not to insult this kid, but like, what? Of course we...
But you're burying the lead a little bit, which is Tara. If you click on that link, the look of just unadulterated glee on the face of this kid standing next to a death ray project is really, like, this is the origin story for a supervillain.
I mean, maybe the 80s were much safer. I mean, they're allowing kids to make death rays now. I clearly wasted my youth wandering around pharmaceutical plants, but they're letting them build death rays now.
I know.
This is it's much more dangerous for all of us.
But
this is,
I think I've talked. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I've talked about this before on the pod, but there was a kid I went to middle school with that everybody sort of made fun of, unfortunately. He was I'm glad I sat that out, you know, why I wasn't a bullying type, but everyone, he was this tall, gangly guy, wore the same white t-shirt and jeans every day, and you know, he was just sat by himself and people thought he was a weirdo, and I always, one of my favorite things that happened in school is in high school, we had a science fair, and he like never talked, he just sat in the back of class, like drawing, you know, horses or just weird kid shit, you know, and I always felt a little bad for the guy, getting bullied and such was, you know, not cool. And we had this science fair my freshman year of high school. So that'd be grade 9. So I was 14 going on 15. And me and a couple buddies decided to go down there, you know, make fun of the nerds,
sure,
you know, see what, aww, was going on. No, not make. No, we didn't do that. We wanted to go check it out. And we go in there and there's this huge, you know, everyone's there with their fake volcano or whatever, standing there at their exhibits. And there's this huge crowd gathered around this one area, and I go over there, and this guy that everyone had been making fun of, he built like a working functional like Iron Man suit, like an exoskeleton suit, and he was just like, he's one of the heads of robotics at MIT now. He was just like gone the next day, like the CIA like took him, and they're like, you work for us now. Like, he was immediately just gone. It was amazing, it was like, it was awesome to see. Like, he used, it was just the arm, but he could put his arm in it and then lift like 1,000 pounds versus whatever weight.
Oh my God.
You know what I mean? Like, it was this crazy. Yeah. And I mean, everybody just had like a, yeah, fake volcano, and they're,
sure,
like, Jesus, Brian. Made an exo suit.
Well, the other thing about this article, it mentions...
I loved his comeuppance. That's my point.
Yes.
I loved that he got his comeuppance. That was great.
Yeah. Wait, is comeuppance also in a good way? I thought comeuppance was also only you got something bad you deserved. Getting good, something good you deserve,
yeah,
is also comeuppance.
But it's, have I misused comeuppance?
Maybe it means you just got your just desserts. I don't know. I
think comeuppance is getting what you deserved, but I think that could be in a good way.
Okay.
Like... But I could be totally wrong. I just assumed it was cool because of all the cum.
Oh,
you
know? Right. Sure.
Come up, and so I wouldn't associate it with a...
The other thing about this article is it just brought to mind, did you guys see any of the Mythbusters when they tried to do this in the scenario with the ships?
No.
Oh, it's really interesting because they were trying to, you know, the actual story where someone is on the shore, or a bunch of people are on the shore with mirrors pointing them at a ship to try to get it to burn. Because yes, obviously enough of these... This is how the nuclear, no, not nuclear, the solar power plant you drive by on the way to Vegas, Ivanpah, that's how that works. It's just a huge array of mirrors pointing at this tower, and it's so hot and bright you can't look at it without sunglasses. Your eyes will be burned for a few seconds afterwards. So obviously it works. It's just a matter of scale, and they tried to do it with whatever Archimedes might have had mirror-wise, you know, and there's a few issues, not the least of which is like, well, I don't know how big mirrors they could build back then were. Flat can work if you have enough of them. If they're parabolic, better, but that'd be harder. And then it's also about aiming them. And Matt, I forgot if it was the year you were at Burning Man when they had one of these. That was an experiment.
I don't think so. If there was, I don't remember seeing it.
So there's lots of structures they burn throughout the week, and one of them was this pyramid with a point on top that if it were burned, it would set the whole thing on fire. And then they handed out thousands of CDs to everybody, and then we all stood around trying to point our CDs at the thing on top, and you could see,
yeah, I definitely wasn't there for that.
I was so excited about it that I heard, I was like, I gotta be there. This is like, I want to see the Mythbusters thing work, because obviously
did you get, like, afterwards, did you get to take the CD home and join AOL?
Yeah, I think they were AOL CDs. They were. But
when did mirrors come about, just to jump in, Andy? Do you know when? I mean, to my mind, they were something that rich people had only until quite recently. They were.
I'm sure. Yeah.
There's different versions, because the version that, you know, we have, which is glass with a sort of silvery,
yes,
thing behind it. That's, I think that is more recent. But having,
yeah,
polished metal, like having like some shiny metal that's been polished a lot, I think they certainly had that more. Let's have a look.
Yeah,
I'm seeing. I guess 6000 BC. They were in.
I guess, yeah,
modern day
quite
Turkey,
a while.
Polished obsidian.
Oh, Oh, polished stone, polished volcanic glass. Though, yeah.
That's what I'm seeing. But so the thing at Burning Man, like, it was getting very bright on top of the thing. But one of the big problems was you can't really correctly do the positioning yourself because there's so many dancing circles of light around that top area. And everyone's...
Oh, you don't know which is you.
Yeah, everyone's trying
You don't have anything to aim.
Yeah, you're just guessing because you're like, is that mine? Did I just suddenly get off course? And after half an hour, they just like poured some lighter fluid on and set it on fire. But it was cool to see the attempt because in theory, yeah, enough of them and positioned correctly, obviously it will work. It's just those are two tricky things to pull off.
This is interesting. So the what makes a mirror, the requirements are a surface with a high degree of flatness, preferable but not necessarily with a high reflectivity. It has to have a surface roughness smaller than the wavelength of light, which makes sense.
That does make sense.
But yeah, I guess anything that falls in those parameters can be used to apply my rouge.
Yeah,
nice.
Or if you're running my favorite, like totally run down. Did you guys ever go to the Valley Regency Valley Plaza 6 second run movie theater in the Valley in LA?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. My God. That place, legendary. Like on Tuesdays, I think it was $1.50, even as recently as 10 years ago.
Yeah.
But it was the kind of place, like, because it's so low rent, we have lost our mirror privileges. Like, I don't know what had happened to lead up to this, but all there is in the bathroom is like a pane of barely brushed metal, like screwed into the wall that you could sort of make out a human form if you look into like, This is prison. This is a movie.
Because people
were
just smashing the glass too often. You're like, you can't be trusted with anything that's breakable now. Yeah. Okay,
I
miss that place.
Looking here, something that was peeking my or sort of tapping at my memory there, that they used to be made with mercury. And apparently that is a fact. And prior to 1835, mirrors were made with mercury. Oh. And they were small in size, very expensive, and the cause of many mirror makers' deaths. So there you go. You had to really love showing other people their faces because it was very, very dangerous.
That's why they say mad as a mirror maker, as we all say.
As we all say.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Crazy. Man. Well, good work, Mr. Senner. Was that his last name?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, the most Canadian-looking kid that's ever existed. And we're happy for him. That is very cool.
Yeah,
I was way too insecure at that. I was way too afraid to be like, because I've my whole life I've been a total nerd, but I tried not to be for about 7 years, maybe. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure.
Like you know what I mean?
It
like
wasn't
when I was like
cool,
a real...
there was no like nerd, cool.
Right?
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah, so when I was like a really little kid, that's the stuff I was into. It was like I like learning magic tricks and how does this thing work and all that, you know. I was super into it. And then, like, I don't know, I got all, like, insecure. Like, no, I need to try, you know, I need to, like, be a thing or whatever for a little. And then you realize that, of course, doesn't matter. And I always have a great amount of respect for people that make it through adolescence in their teenage years that are like, no, I'm going to stay, I'm going to stay in chess club. Fuck you, I like chess.
Right.
You know? That's very cool to me. I was too nervous for that kind of thing, I think. I don't know. I respect the people that stick it through.
Yeah.
Hey, you know who isn't afraid to stand out?
Who's that?
What's that?
A tiny fish that can make noises louder than an elephant, according to a new study. This is another CNN article that Justin Broad sent in. A species of fish that measures no more than half an inch in length is capable of producing sounds louder than an elephant. It's
Jesus.
Danionella cerebrum. A tiny translucent fish that lives in shallow waters off of Myanmar can make noises of more than 140 decibels.
Wow.
What?
Which is comparable to the noise a human perceives of an airplane during takeoff at a distance of 100 meters. And is quite unusual for an animal of such diminutive size, says study author Ralph Britz. An ichthyologist? What is an ichthyologist? Is that someone who studies... I'm just going to have to look it up.
An ichthyologist.
Oh, it is different. Different fish studies different fish species. I don't know what the
an ichthyologist. Wow,
what's the etymology of ichthyology?
Ichthyologist at the Sinkenberg. This is all made up. None of this is real.
Ichthus is Greek for fish. There we go. Okay.
Study author Ralph Britz, an ichthyologist at the Sinkenberg. This is just a Wes Anderson script.
Even down to the fish that makes more noise. Yeah, than yeah.
Jeff Goldblum, I've discovered a fish. Like, yeah.
This is a fairly... Someone, I guess they have. You have to put in this sentence. Large animals tend to be capable of producing louder noises than small ones.
Wow.
You should hear my wife argue.
With elephants able to make up to sounds of up to 125 decibels with their trunks. But small animals can make incredibly loud noises for their size, including the snapping shrimp. We've talked about these before, that use their claws to make popping sounds that measure up to 250 decibels.
That's the pistol shrimp that gave the name to the women's basketball team. Right? Yeah.
There are also some fish species that make unusually loud noises, such as the male plainfin midshipman fish, capable of mating calls up to 130 decibels. But this one seems to be unique among fish.
What's it called?
It's called Danionella cerebrum.
Okay. Yeah.
You know that.
Well, you don't have to tell me. Yeah.
Danionella cerebrum, says Ralph Britz, the ichthyologist at Senckenberg National History Museum.
Here, I made a diorama to explain. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
How does he...
Incredibly symmetrical and pastel colors.
Yeah.
How does he produce the sound? And I mean, and the way sound travels through water, not a ton, I haven't a clue, but I can't think of many sea creatures that make sounds. I mean, I guess sonar and whale communication, but apart from that, you don't hear of like a shark roaring or a salmon whistling. Like, it's just, how does he produce the sound? I want to know. I need to know. It's not in
so
his article.
Here's what it says here. It uses...
Just inventing idioms. Like, that's crazier than a whistling salmon. Man, I'll tell you what. That's...
We're getting into mirror maker territory here.
Right. Yeah.
This whistling salmon.
These researchers use high-speed video recordings, micro-CT scans, and analyze genetic information to show that males of the species possess a unique sound-generating apparatus that includes drumming cartilage, a specialized rib, and fatigue-resistant muscles. They make noise by hitting the cartilage against their swim bladder, which is a gas-filled organ that allows them to maintain depth in water, which produces a rapid pulse. Higher-frequency pulses were produced by compressing the swim bladder from left and right sides in an alternating pattern, while lower-frequency ones were created using repeated unilateral compressions on the same side of the body. So they've got this weird musical instrument going on inside them.
Does it deter predators or does it draw prey in? Are they coming, like they hear this amazing sound and they go, this sounds so cool, gonna hang out over here and then nom.
It says that they use this drumming to align their energies. And that particularly around the solstice.
Yeah, a lot of chakra work. No, it says, we assume the competition between males in this visually restrictive environment contributed to the development of the special mechanism for acoustic communication.
Again.
So I guess they live in very turbid waters, so they need to communicate with each other.
Through sound.
Ooh. Turbid is a great word that doesn't get used enough.
Yeah, I'm trying to throw it in 3 or 4 times a day.
Turbidity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is very cool. I wish that this came with an audio recording so we could hear exactly. Like, that still seems unreasonably, like that's the kind of sound level that if you aren't wearing protection, you will get like permanent hearing damage from prolonged exposure. So,
yeah, that, you know, a lot of people who were in bands with these fish when they were younger regret it later in life.
Yeah. But we didn't care back then. We just wanted to hang and
just hang.
If an airplane took off next to you, that was how things were.
Yeah, when you're swinging on the flippity flop, and
yeah,
we're drinking water out of the hose, and we got spanked, and it was good, and everything was better. There was no participation trophies.
you know what else there was less of in the water back then? Microplastics.
Oh, bringing it down.
But. You know what might improve that? Boiling the water, apparently.
Okay.
This article in Life Science says, a new study says boiling water for 5 minutes could remove most of those microplastics, at least 90% of potentially harmful microplastics. I have no idea how this works.
Yeah, this doesn't seem to make sense.
Seems bizarre. So
I don't even know what microplastics, like I hear about it all the time.
Basically, loads of things which are made of various different types of plastic, and that's like including hard plastics, but also any artificial fibers, any clothes that are made of polyester, nylon, anything like that. Every time you wash them, every time you dry them, they're just pumping up microparticles of plastic constantly, and that finds its way into the water system.
Is that bad for us?
In the atmosphere, potentially. We don't know, but it doesn't seem good.
I mean, I think we know it's is this also related to like phthalates, which are definitely correlated with bad things?
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine in any way that it's generally good to have lots of little particles of something that didn't used to be inside your body and now being found in the water we drink and in, you know, things we excrete.
Sure,
the air we breathe even.
But sometimes I remember, you know, back in my younger sort of wilder partying days, sometimes I would buy a little bag of powdered plastic, you know, and you just go for it, you know?
Yeah, well, in small amounts it's fine, you know, just to get that buzz, but it does say in larger amounts, some such as polystyrene have been shown to kill human cells, cause bowel inflammation, and reduce fertility in mice. So if you're trying to get mice pregnant...
I don't see how boiling can do anything other than make the particles smaller or melt them or... But how can it remove them? I don't understand.
I'm very confused by this as well. So it's... So we know boiling can remove some chemicals and most biological substances. It can, you know, obviously boiling water kills things like bacteria in the water.
I get it.
Yeah.
I get it.
What they did... So it's the hardness of the water helps here.
Yep.
Hard water has calcium carbonate in it. And when you boil it, as I'm sure anyone knows if they've lived in a hard water area and their kettle ends up covered in calcium deposits... But after boiling the samples of water for 5 minutes, they noticed a drastic decline in the amount of microplastics. In harder water, there was nearly a 90% reduction because the calcium carbonate becomes solid at high temperatures and traps the plastic particles within.
So then you have to use a coffee filter to remove the solidified calcium.
Not doing it.
No, exactly. That's what I'm saying. It's like, okay, so then there's another step. Nah. I'm not doing this.
I'm not doing it.
Staying in there. I'll drink my microplastics, please.
Wait, but this means that, like, I have hard water here. So anytime I'm boiling water, if I poured water through a filter, I would see residue in that filter?
I mean, you do anyway. If you live in a hard water area, like, I know where I grew up was very hard water, and our kettle would very quickly become... You'd have to de-limescale your kettle frequently because it just gets covered in... it just gets completely coated.
I get hard water stains. I just didn't realize if I poured freshly boiled water into a filter, would I actually have like powder in that afterwards? Like I didn't think of that.
I mean, it would dry to a powder, but it would look like a sort of scum, like a little residue.
Ugh.
Yeah, because we had that constantly. Like also, you know, where we grew up, if you didn't use filtered water to make your tea or whatever, you would have there's a distinct difference between making tea in the north of England and the south, or depending where you are in the north, but like it looks clearer, whereas where I grew up there'd always be like a sort of residue on the top and it wouldn't be as translucent.
Wow.
And I think the tannins in the tea kind of bond to the limescale deposits.
Are there snobs like for New York bagels where they're like, yeah, we gotta ship the water in here to get the right
well they're if I remember right, I think Yorkshire Tea, the company, made different blends depending on your hardness of water level.
Huh.
That's unreal.
Oh.
I'm scrolling down at the bottom and my see if the article kept going, and when it stops it's a bunch of targeted ads. And my targeted ads have started becoming very, very senior focused lately, and it's really bumming me out.
Oh yeah, same.
Yeah, it happens almost overnight. It goes from gym and weight training and all that to basically, have you bought your grave yet, Nana? Does Nana need a little handrail for her shower? No more stairs for you, Nana. It's wild.
Mine are still get in shape stuff, but it's like it's not young. It's like. You know, how to get in shape with prostate problems. And then it's like an AI image of like a octogenarian on a treadmill. You know, It's brutal.
All of mine are also like weirdly badly translated into English. I don't know why that is a thing that has like is so pervasive in internet ads now. Like it'll just be an ad with four quadrants showing ripped guys with different levels of gray in their beards. And it'll say, get in shape according to the age. And no one would say according to the age. Like, do you mean enlightenment? Like, what do we tell the age?
Right.
And then sometimes I'll get targeted ones like that. But instead of just a buff guy with a gray beard, it's like different animals, like 35 to 44. It's a ripped wolf. Like, do they think I'm a furry or is everyone getting the same ads? Has anyone else gotten those ripped animals in their exercise targeted ads?
Yeah.
No, yeah. I would appreciate it. I would appreciate it more than assuming that everyone stops wanting to be active at a certain point. In my experience, I'm going to be 55 in June and people around my age aren't there. They want to stay in shape and all of that.
Of course.
It's weird how advertisers are, if you still have your mobility, if you're lucky enough to have your mobility and, you know, knock on wood and all of that. But it is wild how the targeted advertising just goes, we no longer want you as a market unless it's for some form of insurance.
Yeah.
Then, you know,
right.
It's bonkers. It is really, and loads of stuff about knees. Now, I am appreciative of that because they are making sounds I've never heard before. So I will take the knee stuff. I'm getting more into knee stuff, guys.
Yeah, I've heard that about you. Yeah. Heard.
I wish there was some way to just reset according to all targeted ads, like make up some different demographics about myself and just see what the internet is for someone who's not in my situation. I'm sure all awful.
My YouTube algorithm is a mess because I was replacing the key tops on that piano and was watching all these tutorials, and now my YouTube algorithm is insane. It's like weird. It's like piano technician stuff, but all of it.
Wow.
That's kind of cool, though.
It's cool, but like it's, you know, I want to watch some. Have you guys watched ASMR lately?
Is it getting better? No.
No, it's gone off the rails. It's unwatchable. ASMR, when it, like, now it's all like weird role plays. It's occurring to me more and more that people are watching it for creepy reasons.
Sure.
Instead of just to fall asleep. And there are too many. It used to just be like going through a Sears catalog together, and it's very boring. And then I'm like, this is great. I need this. But now it's like, you're checking into an intergalactic spa and I'm an alien, but I'm mad at you. And it's just bananas, man. That's way off the rails. That's
insane. And are they playing it like a scene or are they doing sort of more ASMR vocal deliveries? Like what's the setup?
Yeah, it's the vocal delivery. It's like a one-on-one. So like it's like a point of view thing. So you're checking in to, you're checking into a hotel or something and they're checking you in and it's very boring and it takes forever. And that's great. That'll make me sleepy. But they keep adding these caveats because I guess other ASM artists have already done the original hotel check-in. So now it's like you're on the USS Enterprise checking into a hotel on the holodeck and we just broke up and I'm taking the dog. But it's still with that.
Yeah.
Like,
what happened to you're giving me a ponytail? Like, can we not just go back to that?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
The hairbrushing days.
I know.
Did we ever think we'd miss them?
You're measuring me for a hat. Like that.
Exactly. those are some of the best ones. But now even the custom tailor ones are getting all weird. It's like I'm measuring you for a suit for your dad's funeral. What the fuck's going on?
He was killed by the following pirate.
Right, right.
Lord.
You're taking me out of it. I'm just trying to chill out.
So you're clicking on all these, obviously, just to see what the state of the...
I got to see what the state of ASMR, you know, it's sort of like a State of the Union. Like once a year, I check the state of ASMR.
The and state is strong. Yeah.
And also, like, I think since it got popular and profitable for a select few YouTubers, people that have no business doing it are doing it. You know, it used to be pretty reliable. Like you had the algorithm, I mean, was reliable. How to explain? Like, if you searched ASMR on YouTube, it would I assume, show it to you by order of popularity. So all of the big deal ones were up top, and they were good at it. But now there are ones that have millions of views just because the thumbnail is like just someone like in a bra with cleavage, or but so it's like if you click on it, they're very bad at ASMR. Right. So it's like clogging up the feed. Does that make sense?
We're reaching like an ASMR overload situation, or you can't even distinguish good from bad.
Yeah, it's gotten very, very bad. Because all my favorites, you know, there's still only once every 2 months they'll put something new out where it's like, you know, helping you pick new fabric for your couch or something takes an hour, and I'm like, this is awesome. But most of it's so horrible.
But now anyway. It's a space couch.
Yep.
Right. Wow.
Yep.
Are any of you still on Twitter / we don't have to call it X, on Twitter?
I'm on there.
Are you seeing like the only ads, like I do not, others have said this, I don't think they're doing well in the ad department, because all I've ever seen for the last year are Cheech and Chong branded gummies. Are you guys also getting those?
I get more ripped old guys. Oh, okay. There's this guy called the Liver King that just eats raw beef, or like raw meat on the beach.
You don't have to tell me about Liver King, man. I followed that whole trajectory. That was the best when he got outed for steroids, when it's like the most obviously roided person you've ever seen.
Oh no, I didn't know anything that happened with Liver. Oh, what's the drama?
I'll put it in. When Liver King apologizes to the public for his he sounds like a roid guy would sound. Let me see if I can. This is, I guess, 2 years ago. Liver King apologizes for taking steroids and claiming everything was just liver. You know, he's like, hey, all I do is eat liver, and I look like the most terrifying 80s movie villain.
I look like the god Neptune, and I just eat liver. And I'm always on a lake. I don't know what's going on.
Like, yeah, he'll just have like, he'll be out in the forest. He'll as the video starts, he'll put down his axe that he was using for nothing at all, and then go over to a, you know, a stone table where there is just various entrails or whatever, organ meat, offal. Is that what you call it? You know, and you'll just eat like awful. He'll eat a raw sheep testicle, a heart, a liver. Then he'll like do a no feet. Rope climb up to the top of a tree and come back down and be like, Liver King. Okay. Okay, buddy.
Yeah, so all my ads are that guy. That's my point.
But you also know that, like, you could just throw a rock at him and then run 20 meters and he'd probably pass out before he could get to you.
Yeah. It's like the least healthy looking guy with the crazy. Yeah. And just like the abs where, like, each ab is like a bicep, like each of the six or eight. It's terrifying, but he did sort of apologize, but then I posted a link. I gotta find the video, but like it's like one of those half-assed apologies, or he's like not really apologizing. Just own it, Liver King. Whatever, it's fine. No one was expecting you to be paragon of health.
Man, what a liver false monarch.
Yeah.
he should abdicate.
Yes.
I'm stepping down from being the Liver King. I've fallen in love with a commoner and can no longer be the Liver King, and I'm sorry.
And then through a strange set of rules, it turns out that John Goodman is now the Liver King.
Yep.
I never saw that one. Is that any good? Is King Ralph a good movie?
Yeah, man, it's great.
Really?
Come on, it's King Ralph. It's funny.
Oh, speaking of that, is everyone having their picks in for Oscars tomorrow?
Are they tomorrow?
I believe so.
I'm not actually a member of the Academy, so I can't actually vote, but...
You have influence though, Matt. You have a lot of influence.
Yeah, you do. You can get out the vote.
Did I tell you, stop me if I've told you this before, that there was a brief period of time that CAA, the massive agency in Los Angeles, thought that Holly was a voting member of the Academy
because
they just put her name on the wrong list. So she wasn't quite sure why she kept getting invited to these ridiculously high-end like screenings.
Wow.
God,
did she go and do a caper?
Yeah, that's exactly that. Yeah. You know that tiara that we now have in this private place? That's how we got it. We got, they weren't expecting that.
I went and saw all of the animated shorts.
How?
The nominated animated shorts.
How did you see them?
Belcourt Theater in Nashville.
Oh, okay.
Indie theater. And it's they just have the nominated. They have like all the shorts. They'll have programming where, like, you know, you buy a ticket, like a regular movie ticket, and it's just an hour and a half. It'll be all the animated shorts, then all the live action shorts, and all the short documentary. They do that every year, and I always really enjoy that. And that was cool.
Yeah.
You know,
I feel like I suddenly have this pressure of 24 hours, and I realized of the Best Picture nominees, I think I've only seen The Holdovers and Barbie, which is like my worst year ever. So I've 24 hours. What should I? I
guess
I should
watch the Bob over Double Bill.
Yeah, exactly. I guess I should watch Oppenheimer tonight, right? I guess that's the thing to watch if I'm going to do one
sure.
the next day.
I just watched that Poor Things because that just came out to streaming yesterday or something.
Oh, maybe I'll do that. Is it good?
It's weird, man. It's weird.
It's
weird. Yeah, you got to be into that guy's stuff. Right. I mean, like The Lobster's great. You know, Killing of a Sacred Deer is great.
But everyone talks like that in this movie also.
Everyone
this
definitely has
heightened.
A speech. Yeah. Everyone's got really heightened speech. Yeah. Yeah.
It's really, really beautiful, but it's so strange.
Yeah.
So what's everyone's favorite or picks for? I guess everyone knows Oppenheimer is going to win, but what's everyone's favorites of these?
Do we? Do we know this is going to win?
I think it's like 90% favor. It's like the odds in Vegas are not percentage, whatever. It's like the very strong favorite in all betting.
I want Giamatti to get Oscars.
Yeah.
I want Holdovers to do well. I haven't even seen the Best Pictures list. I need to check it out.
I can pop it up in the chat if you want to peruse real quick. Tara, do you have any picks or favorites?
Yeah, I mean, I think Oppenheimer's gonna sweep the boards, and I don't know. I actually haven't seen it. I took a little stand and I went, I don't think I'm gonna go see that because I was being told to see it so right. heavily. But I want Cillian Murphy to win just because he's from Cork and he's brilliant. He's a very sound guy and he's an absolutely astonishing actor. It would just be great for him to win.
Yeah.
So I haven't seen it. I hear it's a great performance. So I would love that. Poor Things is an Irish production company. I'm going to be going for the Irish vote because I'm really pathetic and parochial. I am that boring bitch. So, yeah, I'll be rooting for Poor Things. I'll be rooting for Cillian with no knowledge of the film at all. I'm a very big hypocrite.
No.
I think Cillian Murphy is an incredible actor. I just sometimes they'll do this thing where someone has deserved one for so long and just has happened to never get one.
The Steely Dan rule.
Yeah, and I think they may do that with Giamatti. That's what I'm thinking.
But he also deserves it. I did love that movie. True, it's one of
me too, but I think I think that may be what happens. I'd be very happy with Cillian winning.
And then I guess Nolan hasn't won yet, right? I thought Christopher Nolan had an Oscar, but I guess he doesn't. So this is also maybe the time to give him a directing Oscar.
Mm.
I saw Zone of Interest, and it won't win. It's not gonna. It doesn't have that kind of Hollywood heft behind it. But it is so brilliant.
Zone of Interest is like the next to a concentration camp.
Yes, it's next to Auschwitz, and it's really they explore the mundanity of the life just outside the wall, and it is so chilling, and it's a pure movie. They do certain things that couldn't have been done in any other medium. They do things with the sound, things that rattle you and startle you. It's so brilliant, but it doesn't stand a chance against the heavy hitters, you know, the Hollywood heavy hitters. It is for me that was it's stunning. Like it's you need to be in the hole of your health going in. It's really shattering, but it's brilliant.
Yeah,
I do want to see that. I think I want to see all of these except maybe Killers of the Flower Moon, just because like The Irishman, I hated so much. Matt and I went to see that. And maybe it's just because I had to see it in a theater, so I had to sit through.
No, I didn't see The Irishman with you.
Oh, I thought it was at one of those screenings. No. I forgot who got me into it. I thought you did.
No, but you were talking to me about it on the way back from a different screening, but I haven't seen The Irishman.
Oh, it's just like...
Yeah, I haven't seen The Irishman. Killers of the Flower Moon won't win.
Yeah.
Lily Gladstone will.
Oh, and, I hope she does.
And I agree that Oppenheimer will win Best Picture. Because even like The Holdovers is too indie. It's too indie feel.
It's a small movie, but really good. If you haven't seen it, I love it.
Oh, no, it's great. It's great. But it's, you know.
And then I guess that kid was just like at the school where they were shooting. I just found that out yesterday. He wasn't an actor.
He was in the drama class or something.
Okay,
They were going to be filming at the school during their normal winter break or something. And the drama teacher submitted him.
I see. Okay.
For the part. Yeah.
But like he should get a nomination. The guy was great.
Yeah. Yeah. That guy was really good.
Says the guy again, who's seen very few of these, but I have a strong opinion set up on two that I saw.
Well, okay. So we found out we got the Liver King here. You know who else would have a strong opinion, and then we'll wrap around up and then we'll do stuff for the Patreon page, you know, because we do that. That's what we do, you know. But guys, speaking of films right now, you guys seen Dune 2?
Going to.
I haven't yet.
No.
You're going to. Yeah. See the first one? It's about this, you know, it's with the worms and the spices.
Sure, sure. Mm.
Well, guys. Did you know that scientists have solved the mystery behind Earth's largest sand dune?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. No way.
The age of one of
Earth's... the age mystery.
Giant mystery. The Lala Lalia Star Dune in Morocco is 100 meters high. Now, star dunes, or pyramid dunes, are named after their distinctive shapes and reach hundreds of meters in height. They're found in Africa, Asia, and North America, as well as on Mars. But experts had never before been able to put a date on when they were formed. Now they've discovered that a dune called Lala Lalia in Morocco formed 13,000 years ago. Star dunes are created by opposing winds that change direction. So understanding their age helps scientists understand those winds and unpick the climate of that era, says Professor Jeff Duller at the University of Aberystwyth, who published the research with Professor Charles Bristow of Birkbeck. You know, this whole episode's been making up schools.
I've done stand-up comedy at both of those institutions.
Oh, there you go. Lala Lalia, it's an indigenous Amazigh name, meaning highest sacred point. So it's called Lala Lalia, indigenous Amazigh name, meaning highest sacred point. It's located in the Urgchebi Sand Sea in southeast Morocco. And I appreciate you guys bearing with me on the last article from Morocco they'll let me read on the podcast. It's 100 meters high and 700 meters wide with radiating arms, thus a star dune. After its initial formation, it stopped growing for about 8,000 years and then quickly expanded in the past several thousand. Now, normally deserts can be identified in Earth's geological history, but star dunes were absent until now. So Professor Duller says this may be because they're so large that experts did not realize they were looking at one distinct dune. They got dunes on dunes, these things. So these findings will probably surprise a lot of people as we see how quickly this enormous dune formed and that it was moving across the desert at about 50 centimeters a year, just flying.
Sure.
Yeah, big deal. I can walk at twice that speed.
I could probably, yeah. So the scientists used a technique called luminescence dating to work out the age of the star dune. It calculates when the grains of sand were last exposed to daylight.
That's pretty cool.
That is very cool, yeah. Samples of sand were taken in the dark from Morocco, which is the only way to be taken from Morocco, if you ask me, and analyzed in a lab in dim red light conditions similar to an old-fashioned photography workshop. What? That's still how dark rooms work. What are you talking about?
Professor Duller describes the mineral grains in the sand as little rechargeable batteries. They store energy within the crystals that come from radioactivity in the natural environment. The longer the sand is buried underground, the more radioactivity it's exposed to and the more energy it builds up. When they're exposed in the lab, they release the energy in light form and scientists can calculate their age. In our dark laboratory, we see light from these sand grains. The brighter the light, then the older the sediment grains and the longer it's been since they were buried. And also the more, like, again, the more energy you can gain from them if you place them on a ley line and you get yourself frequency allied in harmonic sequence with them. Again, I've got a sound bath that I'm going to be operating next week. So sign up on the website.
I only had time for a sound shower today. And I really just want to chill out. Well, yeah, that's very cool. I didn't know about that technique for the figure out the sand. I mean, that's incredible.
Yeah.
When it was,
and we have to love. I mean, there has been a bit of a running theme today. Just these people who dedicate their time to things like dating, you know, carbon dating or luminescence dating, things like sand.
Well, they can figure out
about sand for most days, and then there's someone there going full on into it.
I just didn't know there was a way to figure out when something was last exposed to light, you know?
Yeah, that's really cool.
Mm.
Yeah.
Have you guys been to...
take my wife's underpants over to this place. Jesus Christ.
Wait, she doesn't take them off or put... Wait, what's the... Okay. I want to meet this wife, Jesse. She's got a lot of questions about what's going on with her.
Well, she'll meet anybody. Jesus.
I was briefly doing some research on the dunes by Salton Sea, which are really cool. Have you guys been down to that area before?
No.
Yeah. 10 years of living in LA, I never realized, I think it's the biggest sand dune area in the continent. It's where they filmed a lot of things. Like I think the Sarlacc pit from Return of the Jedi, they filmed out there somewhere. The Algodones dunes, there's different names for them, but we're doing research on it for this science show. It didn't go, but learned all these cool things like dunes can pass through each other. Like a larger dune can overtake a smaller dune, you know, at the rate of 50 centimeters a year, but still like come out the other side and the dune behind it is still there somehow. Like has some really
that makes
weird.
Because they're basically like very slow moving waves in water.
Right, right. And they have some of those same properties, which like it still blows my mind. Like how could that smaller one have retained its memory or something? It doesn't make sense, but the science shows it can happen.
Sometimes the night before Christmas, three dunes will visit you.
Okay.
And they could, because they can pass through walls and stuff
right,
too.
Right.
And if you hear like rattling chains, there's maybe a dune close by. Well, I know.
Dunes of Christmas has passed. And yeah. By the way, before we wrap things up, we should put in a quick plug for our upcoming event out here in the desert that we talked about.
We have a date now.
Yeah.
Do we?
We do.
We officially say we have a date.
Yeah.
It's going to happen
June 1st. We will be doing a live podcast and stand-up comedy, and we'll have amazingly high-end telescopes for you to look at various deep space objects. It's called 229 and Beyond. You can go to 229andbeyond.com. I'll put a link here. Right now, it's just a placeholder with the logo, but June 1st, we'll be doing that. So mark June 1st on your calendar if you want to start looking into 29 Palms housing options. It should be very cool. So the main event will be on that Saturday, and as we said, Matt and I and Caitlin presented in front of the Visit 29 board a week or two ago. And it was one of those like life experience, you know, bucket list sort of things. As we said, it was, you know, very like Pawnee Parks and Recreation sort of thing. But we gave them the Hollywood razzle dazzle. We got a grant to do this. So it's going to be a super fun weekend, and we'll try to pack in some other activities. I want to show off all of
these are deep field telescopes.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, this is the real deal astronomy. So that'll be cool. And we'll be there. We'll be doing the podcast. It's going to be stupid. You know, you come out, you see us, it'll be crazy.
Be very fun. Yeah. This whole area, 29 Palms, it's things are happening. Like you feel like, as Caitlin was saying, it feels like the time in a place like this where a few motivated people can sort of move the needle culturally in terms of kicking things off and having more events like this. It sort of feels like, not to be grandiose, but like Bridgetown with Portland. It was like, I wish there was this thing here. And then we built it, and then people liked it because it's also a fun place to visit. And that's what the high desert is like. So I think it'll be a very fun weekend.
And
more details to come.
The people have spoken, and the people have said, we want to see Jesse Case in hot weather. He hates it. He only wears black. He only wears hoodies. Let's get him out there. It'll be hilarious.
I was thinking about this because it's also the weekend. I think the weekend before is when the public pool opens up. And I was like, oh, this is good also because like it can beat the heat. We can have like a probably science pool party. And I was like, no, wait, that's like a horrible idea. Or is it the best idea? I don't know. Would people come to a probably science pool party in the desert?
I don't know, man. We used to have pool parties at the house, so it was a good time.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. But anyway, more details to come, but it'll be very fun.
Tara, where can our listeners find you and everything you're doing, including new podcasts, radio shows, all sorts?
Yes, well, I do a podcast for the BBC with the author Marion Keyes, who you guys might not be familiar with, but she's an absolutely brilliant, funny, very wise person. And so we solve all your problems on a show called Now You're Asking. So, and that's available on BBC Sounds wherever you are in the world for free. And going into a telly show in Ireland when I go back. I'm in Los Angeles right now as I speak to you guys, but when I go back to Ireland, I'm going into a telly show, which I can't announce yet because it's going to be a surprise. But yeah, I'm going to be a big old bitch in it. I'm very, very excited about that.
Excellent.
Oh, awesome.
All right, Tara getting typecast again. And,
yep, you know me.
The worst. Woohoo! You can find us, as always, probablyscience.com. That's where you can find links to all the stories we cover, including that last BBC story about the sand dunes. You can find us on Twitter at probablyscience, individually at Andy T. Wood, at Jesse Kays, and at Matt Kirshen. And if you have any questions, comments, clarifications, stories you would like us to cover, you can email us probablyscience@gmail.com. Also, we have a Patreon link on probablyscience.com where we will do extra bonus stories for our Patreon patrons. And you can find that through there. Tara, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me. I love you guys.
Are you the best?
It's been too long. Thanks for doing it.
Aww.
And listeners, we will see you next time.